Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, where you'll hear inspiring stories and life lessons from amazing Hell Yes entrepreneurs who are running their for-purpose businesses and living their Hell Yes lives. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hell Yes Entrepreneur Podcast. I am your host, Norman Bell, and I am super excited to have as my guest on the show today, Nick Jankel. Now, Nick is an award-winning thought leader, an author, philosopher, professional speaker, transformation catalyst, leadership futurist, and educator. Nick has been a leadership lecturer at Yale and Oxford, a contributor to The Economist and The Guardian, and a recurring thinker on BBC TV and the BBC World Service. He has had articles published in the Financial Times about his work and has been invited to number 10 Downing Street to advise incoming prime ministers. Very impressive. His brain-based methodology, the Switch-On Way, has been used by over 50,000 people and 50-plus Fortune 500 companies around the world. And Nick has launched a new book called Spiritual Atheist, A Quest to Unite Science and Wisdom into a Radical New Life Philosophy to Thrive in the Digital Age. Well, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Don't know who wrote that bio, because it's extensive and embarrassing. But yes, I have touched upon various interesting moments in my life.
Yeah, I even had to cut that down a little bit. There's even probably another good half more.
Exactly.
So very, very impressive. And we'll touch on some of that. I imagine I've had guests on recently. We probably won't be able to cover it all, but we'll try to get to some of the most interesting parts. But I always like to start off by asking our guest, Nick, what is your hell yes? What is that thing that really lights you up and makes you come alive?
I guess in a nutshell, it's transmitting wisdom. So this is my hell yeah, sharing on podcasts, speaking, keynote speaking. I do a lot of leadership training, which is, again, teaching, being with my kids and teaching them cool stuff about the world and about how to feel and think. That's kind of my thing. Is I have a sort of saying to myself, if I'm not speaking, as in sharing, not just listening to myself speak, but sharing or writing, at least in the once in a day, then I probably haven't had a particularly purposeful day. And so that's what gets me juiced up the most.
Great, great. Transmitting wisdom. Sounds like you're a teacher at heart, a speaker, and, you know, a lot of big ideas going on here. So, and we'll get into everything that you have going on now, but do you recall a time, and no pressure if you can't remember the exact moment when you were 7 years old on the playground or something like that, but do you remember a time that was one of the first times you realized, like, this is my hell yes?
Well, it's probably only very recently. Although ironically, writing this book, Spiritual Atheist, which is partly a memoir, it's a philosophical, I call it a philosophical memoir. And I realized that one of the big moments in my life was when I was 15 and I was asked to do a sermon at a religious institution on a Saturday morning. And they picked me out of all the other kids to do the sermon. And a sermon is really a keynote speech. It's same. And I was like, writing the book is like a year ago, 2 years ago. I was like, oh my God, I was doing keynotes when I was 15. Mm-hmm. So in hindsight, as everyone's got perfect 2020 hindsight, I now realize it was very early. But I went through all sorts of different versions of me. I was a medical student. I was a scientist. I was a philosophy student. I was an advertising exec. I was an entrepreneur of different things. So it took me a long time to get to refine really where I was meant to deliver. And I think a lot of people are very talented these days, and it can be really challenging because you're like, well, I could do this. I could be an equine therapist. I could be my wife tells me I could be a masseuse if everything else went wrong. decent cook. So it's definitely, if you are interested in self-development, then you do end up being quite good at a lot of things because you refine yourself. You're working on yourself like a raw material. But then you have to really work out, well, what's my bit of the general world problems the world's have? What's my bit? Because I can't do everything. And yeah, as you get older, you get less and less time with kids. And
you're right.
Tight. I've got to be really like, this is my bit. Yeah. As a business, as me. And that means enormous amounts of sacrifice. It's like, someone should do this idea. It's not going to be me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it's taking me. I'm 45 in a couple of weeks. So it's taking me 45 years to be clear, reasonably, where my, what do you call it? Well, there's spotlights, where my spotlight should be pointed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can really identify with that and sort of the danger of paralysis of like, wow, I could go in so many different directions that I end up going in no direction. So maybe we can end up touching on that later. I'll bet there's a lot of our listeners that may be in a similar position to kind of go a little bit into your process of how you narrowed down a little bit. But I do want to kind of dive into some of the material that, you know, that's on your radar right now. And just start off with your book that just came out just a few months ago, I think, Spiritual Atheist. So why don't you just give us a little introduction to your book?
Yeah, well, it's a book that came to me and like said, you've got to write me right now. So I was like, okay, fair enough. That was really inconvenient because I was writing a different book, which I've just returned to, a leadership book. But the book Spiritual Atheist is partly a memoir about what I've learned since I was 15 to 45 and why that's valuable for other people to learn, particularly as it pertains to three things, living a happy, thriving life, loving, deep, intimate, proper, gorgeous love, and leadership, which is where I spend a lot of my daytime. And to do those three things well, we need to base them on something. We need to base them on what I call in the book a bios, which is the Greek term for a life philosophy, a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And this book basically presents a way of life that you can underpin your leadership work, your entrepreneurial work, your life, and your love life that initially looked to show that spirituality, for want of a better term, I don't like the word, but spirituality, your inner experience of yourself, your consciousness, your sense of who you are from looking inwards, and science, the study of things outside us, looking through telescopes and microscopes, can fit together really nicely. That was the initial part of the book, was to say that they fit together well. You don't have to fight within yourself. Your heart can feel things and your mind can also think things and they can harmonize. Because a lot of people I feel are kind of embarrassed about their spirituality when in business, and they don't know how to bring it into business. They don't have to speak about it. They don't know how to bring their team into it without sounding like a crackpot, or, you know, veering across the state, and church, you know, boundaries. And also, you know, how do you make decisions? What does purpose mean? How do you talk about any of this stuff, connection, in a way that sounds reasonable, that sounds not just rigorous? So that was the real point of the book. But then as I wrote it, something emerged from it even more powerful. And I realized that if you want to be a successful human being, and I don't just mean profit and money and stuff. In fact, I probably mean none of that stuff. I mean, have a relationship that really works and have kids that really love you and love being around you, to be happy to be around yourself, which was for me not an obvious thing for that 15 years, to be happy with being in my own experience. To have that kind of success, we need to be able to not just be okay with science and spirituality, but actually to bring them together in ourselves. Mm. So we're using the best of data, reason, science to make decisions and to understand the world, neuroscience. Whether it's immunizations, whether it's cancer treatment, whether it's what therapy to have for depression, economic decisions. You've got all this data, brilliant. And then you've got this hopefully deep sense of who you are from your own practice, meditation, ecstatic dance, communion, prayer, I don't know, whatever you do. And then we need to bring them together, because in that moment we bring heart and mind together where they should always have been, but they've been split by the modern world. We bring them together and then we can fully live in the moment and make amazing decisions. That's where the book went over the course of writing it. So for me, that just to sort of make sense of that, the reason it's called spiritual atheist, because for me, atheism has kind of got wrapped up with the belief in science and reason as really great things to judge a life by and make decisions. But for me, that wasn't enough. I was, as a dedicated old-fashioned atheist and scientist, I was depressed. I was anxious. I had panic attacks. I was physically unwell. I was making poor business decisions. Mm. I was a terrible boss, ugly boss. And I had to find a way into this consciousness, spiritual peace, this love of myself and others in the world. And then spiritual atheism is like saying they're not two things. They're one. You can be both. That's the kind of, in a nutshell,
that's very ambitious territory and lots of stuff going on there, boy. And I think that we could probably have 4 or 5 podcast episodes just talking about everything that you do. And I think our listeners would love it. I imagine a lot of our listeners are in that space of like, you know, hey, we're entrepreneurs. We want to pursue our passion, but we do have a spiritual side. And I think that is great territory to talk about on the show. So let's talk about that. You had a point where you said you were an atheist, like you didn't believe, you know, or whatever your beliefs were, that there wasn't a God or a higher power, whatever you want to call it, out there. And then it sounds like you had some sort of a transition to, taking in some sort of spirituality. So can you kind of take us to that moment? Like how did that happen for you?
So I had 2 great conversions in my life. The first conversion was from being religious to being an atheist. And I went full. I was like, get rid of everything religious. I don't want any priests. I don't want any books. I don't want any weird rituals. I'm a man of science, baby. And I'm a reason, rational kind of character. And that took me so far. Did about 15 years with that. I call that now in the book materialist atheism. So atheism that then decides that only matter is important, only things you can measure, for want of a better word. But that, though it got me everything you might want in the material world, strangely, I was wealthy. I was 29. I was wealthy on paper. I was a multimillionaire entrepreneur. No exit. I had pre-exit multimillionaire on paper. Had all the credit cards and the black cards and the this card and the Air Miles cards, and I had a pretty girlfriend and I had a house in London. I had all the things you think you want.
Yeah.
But I had none of the things I really deeply wanted and now realize are the things that give my life so much juice. And I had a full meltdown. I mean, you could call it entrepreneurial burnout. I do. It was. But if you go, and that was working like crazy on a belief system and a business model that was here, dipped into that, realized that underneath that was a whole host of what I now call patterns that I'd grown up from childhood that were driving the business and the entrepreneurial burnout, that were no longer a good fit for me. They were no longer helping. They had once been, you know, adaptive responses to difficult times as a child, but now they were driving me to do crazy stuff. And I went into that. I'd already had lots of psychotherapy, so I knew that wasn't in itself just the answer. And it wasn't until I could find my way to a profound sense of spiritual connection. And you'd have to use the S word, spiritual. You can just get rid of that word if you don't like it. I don't like it particularly, but it's not much. There's not really good other words. But until one feels something in one's body, it has to be in your body. It can't just be this idea in your mind from reading a book. Until you feel something in your body that feels connected to everything else, which is the quintessential mystical or enlightened experience. Mm-hmm. My experience of life is until you find that thing, A, you can't fully heal your own trauma. Which means B, you can't fully break through your deepest patterns. Your addictions will keep coming back. You can manage them, but you don't release them. And then you end up being the same version of you 10 years later, just with a Tesla instead of a Lexus. You know, that's the summary. And third, perhaps most importantly, as an entrepreneur, you will never really discover your true purpose. You'll have lots of ideas about what you think you should do and should be. And that's, I used to literally sit crying, confused with all these different ideas of what a life should be as an entrepreneur, what decision to make, what product to do next. And it wasn't until I could refine my purpose which for me is a quintessentially spiritual experience. I think in this book or a book I've written, you don't get to choose your purpose, but you do get to choose what you do with it. And so you don't get to feel it, that sense of, and I call love a purpose, by the way, another saying, a simple way of understanding purpose, love in action, love that's coming into behavior. You don't get to understand it until you can heal away some of the trauma of the need for power, the need for money, the need for fame, the need for click rates, the need for claps on Medium or whatever it is that your ego thinks it needs to feel good about being an entrepreneur. You don't get to get past that stuff and find purpose until you can feel this spiritual experience. In my experience, and I was a medic. I went through every other way. I didn't want to be spiritual. Even now when I say the words, I'm like, it's not my, you know, not for me. And in business, it's tough talking about this stuff. You know, it's not an easy thing. But it's the only truth that I've discovered that's inalienable and essential, and everything that I've ever wanted, including a thriving business, has come from that work, which took about 10 years, by the way. So it's not like a one stop.
Yeah.
Where do I get this spiritual experience purpose thing? I don't think it ever stops. The work doesn't stop. It's an ongoing experience. You know, something happens, an email comes in, a client leaves you, you get triggered. You're like, oh my God, run, try and be loved again. Relax, realize I'm already loved. Okay, good. Okay, now what should I do next with my business? That's an ongoing experience that doesn't go, but it gets easier, I think is the summary.
Thanks for sharing all that, Nick. That is, I think that's really useful to hear from someone who, you know, was at the top, kind of the top of the game, you know, the traditional game of like, hey, I had everything. I was worth millions. I had, you know, the car and the girl and everything else. And you felt empty inside. And it wasn't until you had this transition or evolution or whatever to connect with your spirituality that you really found this. So I'm wondering, I'm trying to think for our listeners out there, maybe there's someone who's at the top of their game listening to this and they feel empty and they want to know their way forward. Or I'm guessing more, you know, people like me who are somewhere on the road to trying to find their hell yes, you know, develop their hell yes business. And I know I can be like that. Just like you were saying there, I kind of go in and out of, you know, being focused on being of service to other people. And then I'm focused on, oh, how many listeners are there? How many likes did I get on that post and all that stuff? And really a lot of the way things are structured, they're almost kind of feed into that, aren't they? It's like, oh, likes and listener and all that stuff. So what do we do? You know, like you said, it's a long process, but what can we do to start to shift towards you know, connecting with, and again, we'll just use the word spiritual right now, for lack of a better term, but to that more of that spiritual side of ourselves.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's so many diving in points, and in fact, this book and my last book, one of the things I think I do with my books is I give people diving off points. They're very accessible. They're very, personable, but they don't say, here's a book on Kabbalah, or here's a book on Sufism, or here's, I'm quite a generalist. So I sort of say, well, you know, here's Sufism, go off and buy a book on Sufism if that, you know, appeals. And one of the things I've definitely noticed in life is different practices, different pathways appeal at different times. So if you're feeling a sense, like as I am, this is very personal, I want to restart Aikido, which I haven't done since I was a kid. Just follow that curiosity, because that curiosity is actually what I would call your connector or a mode of your being, which is pushing you forward, propelling you forward. Listening to podcasts, picking up a book. You're like, oh, I'm going to take this book on holiday. Those are all little, what did you call them? Breadcrumbs. To the gingerbread tree, gingerbread house, where everything's awesome. So follow those breadcrumbs. You know, if you get a sense that you should download this podcast and listen to it on the airplane, do that, because that might be the moment. There might be a moment in that flight where you go, oh my God. And then you send a different email that day and everything comes through there. So this is how it all happens. There's no, you know, you can go away on a retreat. You can come to the kind of workshops that I run. They're wonderful, extraordinary. And I think one should build that into one's life, you know, once a year, whatever. But life is played out in the emails, in the texts, in the clicking on a signed document in which client you decide to email that day, right? So you have to be continuously listening to your, what I would call in the book, intuition. And I think there's ways to refine that intuition. It's not just a, you know, one thing. So there's two things. So one is follow the curiosity, follow where you're, the follow the breadcrumbs. Second is schedule something in your life once or twice a year to go deep, where you decide I'm going to go intentionally into myself, retreat, Burning Man, do a course at, I don't know, Harvard Business School, whatever, up to you. But again, follow curiosity. But the third thing I think is super important is what I would call a transformation practice or a wisdom practice. And the clue is the word practice. It's something you do every day or most days. And everyone's got to find their own. And again, you can use different ones for different periods of your life. If it's yoga, if you've got a bad back and it's Pilates, if it's someone invites you to a sober ecstatic dance thing and you're like, wow, I've never heard of this thing, go, you know, just get involved and find something that brings you into yourself. But just bring your intentionality to it. Don't just do it as a pastime. Say, you know, I'm going to do this practice of yoga to find my business purpose over the next 3 months, or to get more clues to my business purpose. Those three things are probably great jumping off points. And I guess the key thing is don't leave it till you have the burnout, because it's much harder when you're exhausted from burnout or breakdown. It's still rich. I mean, I would never change anything in my life. I'm glad I had all the melted on the floor heaps of psychological mess that I've been. And rock bottom, powerful place to go upwards, because there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
But I definitely would advise preventative wisdom over, you know, like anything, you know, do your physio exercises rather than have back surgery, if possible.
Right.
It's cheaper and less painful.
Right. It's not as dramatic. It's, you know,
it's not as exciting. Exactly.
Yeah. Not as exciting, but, probably a better way to go. I really identify with what you were saying there. And I'll bet a lot of our listeners can too, the difference between sort of a head-based day, let's say, or a head-based activity where you're scrambling and kind of running. I think of it as running on fumes, you know, just sort of like, I've got to figure out what the next step is for me. And what am I going to do with my business? And what
hustle.
Exactly. Hustle and grind sort of thing. And that can be popular in the entrepreneur world, but I kind of thought of a term that I'm not going to coin it or copyright it or anything, but I was like grindfulness, you know, like, you know, we got to merge grind and mindfulness a little bit and work hard, but we got to do it mindfully. So just like that, between that and then this sort of more of being in this grounded intuitive place where things kind of emerge from a different place. I think we can, I don't know, I'm just guessing a lot of the people that listening to this can identify with the difference between those two types of experiences, right? Where, things are just kind of happening more organically, sort of follow the thread of things. And that's, I think, where we want to be Hell Yes Entrepreneurs.
You just spoken to something that really the book is all about, which, so this again, the spiritual atheism. So two things coming together: grind, hustle, get stuff done. If you don't do that, there is no business. You know, there is nothing. On the other hand, intuition, spirit. You know what? I'm going to spend an hour walking today. I'm going to stop work today and go be with my kid. I'm going to reflect on this email before I send it. And the joy of life is to be both purpose and profit. Yeah. Another one of these seemingly tensions. You know, and I talk in the book about an early Greek philosopher who says that, essentially my take, the key to a wise life is taking things that seem to be opposite and bringing them together in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're someone who has a big vision, is always talking about big vision, but you do nothing, you don't hustle, you don't set up the business, you don't do the social media account and all the other bits that have to happen, you're going to be dreaming for a long time and nothing's going to happen. Yeah. But I've done that. And I do that sometimes. On the other hand, most of us probably are over grinders, over hustlers, and it's unsustainable. It doesn't work. It's not fun. It's not sexy. And ultimately, I think it ends up creating poor quality businesses that don't fundamentally make the world a different place. But I will say, sort of buyer beware, what I have learned in this kind of purpose-driven business, conscious business, whatever you want to call this sort of hybrid form that we're talking about, it's definitely slower than the old version. And I've written an article, which I haven't yet published, on Medium called Unicorns versus Tortoises. So unicorns are what people call billion-dollar startups that become, they're so rare, they're like unicorns.
Right.
Tortoises are these very slow, okay, this year it's one book, next year it's you know, 10 grand more a year revenue, whatever, much slower than I used to live. I used to be like, okay, now I've got 50 staff, let's get to 150, let's have five offices in every, that was kind of, I used to live in that kind of Silicon Valley, fast, space, but I know what happened to me when it happened.
Yeah.
If you look at all the Silicon Valley organizations that live that value system, very few of them, A, create anything better in the world, and B, very few of them actually survive in a valuable form post-acquisition. So that someone might have exited and made a lot of money, but there's nothing really in the world left from it because it was so fast.
Yeah.
Whereas this path now that I'm on now, beautiful things happen. I definitely am moving upwards. There's definitely growth, but it's not so spectacular. It's not, again, not so dramatic.
Yeah.
But it's more solid and it just, it's a lifetime's work to build something of value, I think, of real value.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, yeah, that's sort of like there's something addictive about that that fast-paced mode. And of course, you know, okay, we're going to try to make as much money as we can, and that's all there is to this. And so, yeah, I really identify with that. Can you talk a little bit about in the book? You say there are three threats all entrepreneurs have to engage with.
It's one of my favorite thoughts at the moment. So, in my keynotes, I say to leaders, to anyone listening, actually, there are three things that every human being is going to have to engage with, whether you want to or not, whether you think you can get out of business before, you know, retire before they hit, they're hitting now. So the first one is exponential technologies. So AI, robots, drones, Internet of Things, blockchain, cryptocurrency. No one person knows any one of those things inside out, let alone all of them hitting our world all at the same time. In the next 10 years, they're going to be connected, integrated. It's anything that isn't digital and somehow using those things will be out of date in some way. That's a reality that we all face, right? We will be out of date in some way. So that's one thing you've got to engage with. If that were not enough, there's also what I call existential risks. So you've got climate change, air pollution, which is killing millions of people in the US every year. We don't even know about it. Mm. Obesity, depression, anxiety, food scarcity, water scarcity, energy scarcity. So we've got this in sort of natural world existential catastrophes potentially coming, literally, as we can tell from the weather changes, at least recently, sort of exploding in our world. So there's two big things. If that were not enough, there's a third one, which is massive generational and societal change. So what you're seeing in the US, the UK, a lot of countries is a generation that is more open and a generation that's more closed, colliding. You're seeing the welfare state becoming bankrupt. The sort of New Deal is running on fumes. US and UK, 10 years, 15 years, there is going to be no money really left in the welfare system. Healthcare systems, etc., all colliding and breaking, and young people particularly demanding a new social contract, a new way of life. As I say, slightly offhand, but by no means glibly, if you're 23 and you're going into workplace, it's not a bonus or an extra or perk not to be groped on the way to the washroom. You know, this is not a bonus. This is just how it has to be. I want to be empowered. I want to have equality, and I want to have ethics, and I want to have purpose, and I want to collaborate, and I want to innovate. And if you can't give me any of those things in this job, doesn't matter. You're paying me $50,000 a year for a graduate salary. I don't want it. Not everyone, obviously, but you're not going to get the best people. Yeah. So every company, every entrepreneur, every leader, every individual has to go, okay, what am I going to do? Who am I going to be in a technological world, in a stressed world, and in a disrupted, culturally disrupted world? And on the one hand, that's terrifying. Can't think of anything more terrifying. On the other, wow, everything's shifting and changing. And as entrepreneurs know, when things shift and change, there's opportunity. So it's incredible what's now available to all of us. A podcast, you know, 50 years ago, there's no way you could have a podcast because the means of production was owned by CBS.
Right.
And that was it. And unless the person at CBS thought you were the genius for the next 20, 30 years, that you just, there was no way you could get to people to share your ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously a lot of different directions we could go just based on what you just said right there. I'm interested in, I know you have some expertise in talking about this new technology, artificial intelligence and so forth. And you have talked about ways to ensure that that new technology like AI and blockchain are used for good. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I guess there's two parts of that conversation that's really important. One is, if we don't use technologies from the right place within us, then we just use them to make everything faster and richer and whatever, you know where that ends, right? So purpose, the importance of having a purpose in your tech business, whether you use tech or create tech, is of paramount importance. Otherwise, all we'll do is use technology to make things faster and make the rich people richer. It's just that simple. So that's one thing, deep purpose. The second thing is being really clear what digital technology can and can't do. And there are some people who do believe that AI will replace us. And what I believe fundamentally from my understanding of how the brain works and what consciousness is that AI will replace where anything that we do that's analytical, it'll be better than us. And I'm like, yay, you know, someone can do my expenses and my invoicing, and my debtors reports,
right.
And optimize my social media posts all without me having to do any of it. I'm definitely going to license that technology. I'm like all over it. But the bit AI can't do, because it's not designed to do, is it can't do wisdom. So I say there's no such thing as artificial wisdom. I don't believe AI will be able to talk your employee from a place of overwhelm and stress to a place of feeling really awesome, hell yeah experience. AI can't do that. So that gives leaders an opportunity and entrepreneurs to it's a two-way street. You have to give up being a technical genius, because the AI will do that better than you. Because it's rule-based, technical stuff is rule-based. So you could give that up. You can't feel safe in your little bubble of spreadsheets or engineering or whatever you do, coding, which means, boom, you get this opportunity to become a people person, which is what leadership is all about anyway. And that's where you get purpose. So the two things are kind of interlinked. And this means deepening our wisdom in business. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It means expanding consciousness of leaders and entrepreneurs.
I know that there's a lot of, and I'm sure you actually work with a lot of leaders and entrepreneurs that are incorporating this sense of purpose and wisdom into their work. When I think about on the whole, it sort of feels like business is still very profit driven and kind of blind to what the world that's being created from this singular focus on profit. Do you have a lot of hope of it being able to instill purpose into the business world?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I see enormous amounts of people just going through the motions, you know, and I understand it. Most people are overwhelmed in your cubicle, overwhelmed. And then you're asking me to become purposeful and conscious and loving and caring and empathic and create psychological safety for my team. I can't, right? So I get that. I get how hard it is. I get how hard the system makes it. As you and I know from this media work, the first thing people ask you is, you know, what's your Twitter following? What's your Instagram?
Yeah.
That's what the world is right now. It's on numbers and scale and stuff. So on the one hand, I see a lot of lips at what you might call purpose washing. We've got a purpose. Okay, what's it? How are you being service to humanity? Well, it's just this lovely thing we've got on the reception, you know, door. And so, well, that's not purpose. That's, you know. So on the one hand, I see a lot of that overwhelm, purpose washing, you know, fads, purpose is a fad. But on the other hand, I also see lots of people from all sorts of companies I work with, all sorts of entrepreneurs all over the world, generally moving towards a more open, conscious, creative, collaborative way of working.
Yeah.
Generally. So the question is it quick enough, given the triple threat? That I don't know. don't know where the environment and our evolution, which is always, you know, evolution theory has always been in the background. When our environment's coming here and we're coming here, are we going to fit, or is it going to be, you know, some kind of, you know, the dinosaurs didn't make it, right? So
Right.
don't know. I hope, I pray.
Right. Something will happen.
We know.
Yeah.
We know something's going
to
happen.
I always try to think about, like, the earth itself will be fine. You know, like, you know,
we're always worried about the environment.
Like,
all about the planet, man. I'm like, dude, the planet is fine. Yeah. The planet will come back with another species, another 10,000 evolutionary. The planet's just fine.
Yeah.
What isn't necessarily going to be fine is us as a species. That's the you know, 9 billion people all eating steak twice a week.
Right.
It's not possible.
Not
as far as we know. It's just, you know. So, but then, you know, there's this new kind of plant-based steak, which I still really want to have and haven't been able to have yet, Beyond Meat.
Oh, nice. So,
you know, there are so many silver linings and green shoots. And I guess the ultimate answer is we all get to choose what happens next.
Yeah. I, you know, just to hop on the optimism train a little bit, like, you know, humanity is a big ship to turn around. And it does seem like, you know, I drive an electric car and so I every once in a while check in about news about that. And it seems like, wow, there's countries that are committing to going, you know, gas car free by X year and so forth. So there's, you know, there is. Things are happening, and then, like you said, with the millennial generation and younger people, there's more of a sense of that in their lives. So, anyway, not that I'm an expert here, but go humans!
Come on, go humans! Exactly.
Okay. Well, last question. I think we could go on and on here, but I wanted to ask you about this idea of some of these activities like shamanism, nightclubbing, and attending the Burning Man Festival, and what those kinds of activities can offer fast growth entrepreneurs. Tell us a little bit about that.
A lot, I think, is the answer. So for me, shamanic experiences, shamanic medicines, as well as clubbing, as well as Burning Man, they all were in some ways ecstatic experiences. So ecstasy is a ancient Greek experience, meaning essentially to be out of your usual mindset. So, and the benefit of ecstatic experiences versus meditative experiences, and they get you kind of to the same place eventually, but one is very quiet and subtle and takes a long time. These shamanic sort of experiences, ecstatic experiences, take a much quicker, but then they're harder to integrate because they're like, amazing experience, Burning Man, blew my mind. I didn't even know where to start bringing that back into work. So I don't believe they're mutually exclusive. So Burning Man and meditation, very clever. Shamanic experience in Peru, psychotherapy to integrate it, great. So for me, they are, the shamanic ecstatic experiences are kind of very quick door openings to what's possible, which you can then work to get back to on your own. So you might well find, if you go to an ecstatic festival or you go to Peru or, you know, the Colorado mountains, you might find you get a glimpse of purpose or a glimpse of what you want your company to be like. And then you have to do the hard work of integrating it in the days and weeks. I do see a lot of sort of hipster Silicon Valley type entrepreneurs going to Burning Man and going to Peru and coming back with all these kind of ideas, but then they don't know how to make it different in the company, and people still have the same issues with them because they're not integrating it.
Right.
So they're definitely useful, but just, you know, again, buyer be warned. If you're not then bringing them back into the how you write your emails, the words you use on your website, how you treat your employee when you're tired on a Thursday night, then it, you know, whatevs. You know, hasn't made any difference. So really great. Integrate.
Really great. Integrate. Great. And again, I'm sure we could go way down the rabbit hole on that whole topic right there, but with the limits of time.
Rabbit hole.
Yes. No pun intended, because that is actually probably like Alice in Wonderland. Right? So just wanted to add, as we wind down, do you have any, you know, you've already given us a lot of value there here, a lot of great things to think about, a lot of tips and suggestions, but any one extra tip that you have for our Hell Yes entrepreneurs to take away from this that they might be able to put into action? It could be around, you know, mindset. It could be an action to take, etc. But anything you would suggest our entrepreneurs to do?
Okay, I'm going to be bold.
Yes, go for it.
I'm going to say by midnight tonight.
Yeah.
Whenever you're listening to this, whatever time of day, take some action with your curiosity to the next step of your own development of your consciousness. Mm. Buy a book, watch something, watch a TED talk, meditate for 10 minutes, spend some time with your kid, whatever it is, consciously go, okay, I'm a work in progress. I'm not cooked. So what's the next step for my cooking? You know, what's the next step for my recipe of who I am, my recipe of who I am. You know, that's the joyous bit of life, is to keep on cooking, keep on tweaking the recipe, because it's never cooked. There's so much richness. There's so many challenges. There's so many areas where we're not fully showing up in a full hell yeah. You know, I can be with my kids, so with them in 1 minute, and then dismissive because I'm on a, you know, on my phone the next minute.
Yeah.
Okay, focus on that next, you know, whatever it is, just do something by midnight tonight that just pushes you into that next stage of your evolutionary journey.
Love it. Love it. Thanks for the kind of the time limitation there too. So hell yes, entrepreneurs out there, by midnight tonight, something with intention that's going to push you to that next level of your spiritual evolution. No pressure here. But yeah,
it's possible.
Just like, as we were saying, like the difference between that kind of that head activity of like grinding away and that, you know, something that comes more from a deeper place, you know, from your intuition. So great. Well, Nick, so if people wanted to connect with you more, find out more about what you're up to, where can we find you on the internet?
I am literally all over the internet. Probably not as focused as I could be, something to do for myself. I'm on Medium, I'm on whatever, but the easiest thing to do is go to Switch On Now, my website, switchonnow.com. Spelt like it sounds. There's all the social links immediately for you to go and find me on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever you like, LinkedIn if you're into business stuff. But there's also, I always point out, if you click on inspiration, there's a bunch of free stuff, loads of different free things you can download. And then you'll be on my mailing list, and I send out videos and articles and all sorts of things. But if you want the book, probably actually easy just to go to Amazon or Barnes and Noble and order it direct, because it's actually a little bit harder to find on the website because it's not the only thing I do. And also, don't tell anyone, but I kind of kept this particular book, I wouldn't say below the radar, but I don't put it front and foremost when I'm going to a Fortune 100 company for a leadership program. I don't go, spiritual atheist. It's there. If you want to go deeper into my work, go find it. But so I keep it a little on the down low. Because it was a risky endeavor for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep this kind of in this episode. So anybody listening here, is like, just don't tell those Fortune 500
C-suite. Don't use the S word.
Yeah. Great. Well, Nick, I always like to round things out by saying hell yes together on the count of three. It would be sort of like a hell yes sort of a thing. Are you willing to do that?
I'm ready.
All right. Let's do it. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. Perfect. Great. Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a hell yes life.